So we're going to be talking about The Great Work of Your Life, which is by Stephen Cope. It's a great book on Dharma. Dharma comes from the Sanskrit word dri. So Dharma is a Sanskrit word itself, but Dharma originates from the root word of dri. Dri means to carry. So this podcast is about Dharma, this particular one and this topic that we're talking about. And your Dharma is your path. Your Dharma means justice, it means law, it means like something you carry with you through this life. Your Dharma connects to and has a direct correlation with your karma. So your karma, meaning your action, right? And you could think like, in one sense, your karma can lead you to your Dharma, in that if you're born into a certain family, like let's say you're born into a family of yogis. And I always say that my son has better karma than I do, because he was born with me as his dad, who is pursuing yoga and teaching, and he's been around it. And then I think of my teacher's children, Raghunath, and his kids. Oh my goodness, right? They're going to India with him every year. Their consciousness and their understanding about spiritual topics has been since day one for them. So you know, they have better karma than Raghunath, even, because Raghunath wasn't born into a family of yogis. And that's right out of the Bhagavad Gita. So anything I say today is really stemming from the Bhagavad Gita. Like, there might be other things that we're talking about, but in the general sense, it's just not like Millard's discourse on yoga or Millard's discourse on Dharma. It is, you know, stemming from a tradition and a text that is venerated as a great yogic text. So, in Stephen Cope's book, The Great Work of Your Life, is a very interesting take on Dharma, because what he does is he takes people like Walt Whitman, Robert Frost, Jane Goodall, Susan B. Anthony, Beethoven, right? And he'll talk about how they've lived their life on purpose. When you're living your life on purpose, you are essentially connected in living your Dharma. So this is something for me that's been very interesting, because for me, I knew from a very young age that I wanted to teach martial arts and I wanted to help people and I wanted to treat them with acupuncture and Chinese medicine. That was like my goal from a very young age. And I can remember being probably 16 or so and thinking, wow, wouldn't it be cool to have a martial arts school, but then also have the herbs and the acupuncture there to help them with their ailments that come up. In reality, I had watched the Steven Seagal movie from the early 90s, maybe late 80s, called Hard to Kill. And in it, he treats himself with acupuncture and Chinese herbs and moxibustion and to repair his body after being, you know, brutally attacked. And the scene, he talks about, you know, his martial arts teacher, and his first martial arts teacher, he said that he went to his teacher and he said, you know, the teacher said, you know, so you want to learn how to fight, or you want to learn how to hurt people? And he goes, yeah, I want to learn how to fight. And he goes, the teacher said, first learn to heal people. And then after that, forget about it. I was hooked. I was like, this is for me. That's just, I felt that philosophy so deep. Yeah, so that that impacted my Dharma in many ways of what I wanted to do with my life. and I pursued it relentlessly. Like, I can remember being in high school and eating at the cafeteria, and then, you know, after you ate, you would go to the commons, which is like a common ground where each grade kind of had their own little hangout area, and, you know, everybody would chat then or whatever. But I would go to the library and I would start to research Chinese herbs and from the library, and I was hooked. So that was part of my dharma. Now, we all have different aspects of our dharma, right? Your gender, in some ways, how you associate, right, is part of your dharma. So meaning, like, you might feel very connected to being a parent, whether it's a mother or a father, because you have that dharma, you know, once you have a child. And that's part of it. You have a dharma to be a son or a daughter. You have a dharma geographically with your country. You know, so it keeps going out. Even as a human, there's a certain amount of dharma that's connected to our machine. And so there's different types of dharma. And there's also something called Sanatana Dharma, which is basically your connection to something higher than yourself. You could even say a connection to God. And that everybody has. It's wired into us. But then you have your more common understanding, which most people would have some kind of understanding of, which is your dharma as it relates to your vocation. And your dharma as it relates to what lights you up. One of the ways you could think about this is I apprentice with a guy by the name of Billy Sharp, and he's one of the best mechanics on Long Island for fixing older Harley Davidsons and newer Harley Davidsons. But he specializes in restoring antiques, knuckleheads, panheads, shovelheads. These are the Harley Davidsons from the 1936 to 1984. These are, quote unquote, like the more nostalgic bikes. After that, Harley kind of lost some of its cool sauce, some people think. But I have this definite affinity for these antique motorcycles. And every Monday I go there and I work with Billy. And it's an amazing thing that he's allowed me to do for the past almost 4 years now. So Billy, he's an A mechanic. And he's mostly self-taught, but obviously had some help along the way. But he enjoys his vocation. I've also met mechanics who don't like being mechanics. It's just what they were put here to do. So really, like, whatever it is, whatever career path you choose, you will find people in that career who love what they do, and you'll find people in that career who really don't have much of a passion for what they do. They just fell into it. You can see that with doctors. You know, people become doctors for different reasons. Parental pressure, societal pressure, monetary gain, you know, let me be a doctor. And then you have people who become doctors because they really want to do best and care for patients and treat people that are sick, you know. So, I mean, you have different groupings within any vocation. So what is your dharma, right? It's probably one of the most important questions you'll ever ask yourself, which is, why am I here? And how can I connect to some reason why I'm here? That is what the Bhagavad Gita is really teaching. Like, one of the core teachings in the Gita, which is a famous yogic text, about 2,500 years old. It is a book within a book, meaning it is a chapter within a much larger book called the Mahabharata. And so it's one chapter taken out of that. And that book now becomes the primary book for study of yoga. Yeah, you have the Yoga Sutras, but if you go to India, there aren't many people studying and practicing the Yoga Sutras. But you will find hundreds of thousands, millions of people studying the Bhagavad Gita still to this day and living that practice. So the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad is like Bhagavan, which means God, and Gita means song. So God's song. And so the Bhagavad Gita, what you have is a situation that's unfolded where Arjuna is a great warrior. Basically, you would call him a modern day, like what we would see as like a Navy SEAL, an elite warrior who leads men into battle and is a very skilled warrior himself. That is Arjuna. Now, his cousin is Krishna. And Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita is being represented in his grander form, because he has different forms, you know, sometimes as a child, right? Sometimes as a teenager. In this, he's more of the adult, and he's representing more Vishnu, and kind of has a little bit more opulence to him. And at first, you don't really know that he's God, but, you know, you just know him as a great yogi mystic, and you just know him as Arjuna's cousin, who's helping him with this situation where they're on the battlefield for political reasons. On the other side, he looks out and he sees his family. And when he sees his family, he balks. And he gets despondent, and he actually makes a really good case of why they should not go to war and how war is horrible. And you think in the beginning, in the first chapter, you think, oh, he's making a good point. He's clearly the more educated one here. And then Krishna kind of turns it on its head, and he encourages him to fight because it is his duty. And that word duty is really his dharma, right? It's your dharma. It's your path to fight. Now, I joke around with students when I'm teaching them this, and I say, you know, if Krishna was having a conversation with Julia Childs in that moment, he would tell her that she would need to cook. She would need to make the meal, do the thing that she is connected to. That is her dharma. And she may say, oh, no, Thanksgiving this year, you know, I have this one, and they're a vegan, and this one's a vegetarian, and that one's gluten-free, and this one's carnivore, and that one's paleo, and that one's keto, and how am I going to cook a meal for... And Krishna would ease her off of that, hear her out, but then tell her, you need to cook, you need to do your duty. You were put on this earth to make wonderful food. That's her dharma, that's her vocation. So sometimes, and this is such an interesting point, sometimes our dharma will be challenged. And in this book by Stephen Cope, he talks about how Beethoven is going deaf. And as he's going deaf, his dharma is being challenged. Because he's this great musician of the time, right? And he's going to be such a great musician that he's going to be like known for decades after that, for centuries after that. So he's such a good musician. It's clearly his dharma. But then his problem, the pathology of going deaf, is creeping in. And it's challenging that very dharma. And in that, the issue is, and the problem that you're facing actually becomes and merges with the gift. This is powerful. It's powerful. And that that dharma. Think of you're a Beethoven and you're going deaf. So at a certain point in life, even after you figure out your dharma, it doesn't necessarily mean that now it's cool, this is smooth sailing, right? I don't have to worry about anything anymore. I'm good to go. That's not the case. It's going to be challenged at a certain point. It's almost like the universe testing. I remember once I was going down to Florida to see my mridanga teacher, my drum teacher, Vish, and I missed my flight. I couldn't believe I missed my flight. I was so annoyed. And I'm at LaGuardia, and I'm like, I missed my flight. What do I do? And there was part of me that was like, maybe I'll just go. I didn't, not that I didn't want to go, but it seemed like a big of a hassle. I had to leave work. I had to, I owned the yoga studios at the time, and it was like, it was a big deal. And I was like, maybe I'll just stay. And it was over Thanksgiving. But I had this idea to go down there and really work with Vish for like 4 hours a day on the drum. So as I get there, I had this overwhelming feeling of this is the test. Like, how bad do you want it? How bad do you want it? Do you want it that bad where you're going to pay for another ticket today and you're going to wait and you're going to... And I did. But I felt like that little bit of a challenge and that little bit of a how bad do you want it? So your dharma will be tested as you go through this life. I mean, mine has so many times with martial arts, with yoga, with jujitsu, with, Chinese medicine. It's really, and what he talks about in the book is being at a crossroads. And you basically take your chair and you put it down. Like you unfold this folding chair in the middle of this intersection and you don't know which way to go. One of the other things that he says is in the book, he says, you're most likely not that far from your dharma. Like it's not like you're light years off. It's going to be a matter of naming your dharma and then claiming it. Naming it and claiming it. What does that mean? That means I acknowledge what it is and now I'm going to claim it. And I know what it is. Because if I keep it all vague and foggy, there's a good chance. Like if you never set up parameters for what success is, if I never set up a good parameter for what failure is, and I keep everything all vague and foggy, well, then I never really know if I succeed or I fail on anything. Because I don't really put my effort into it. Where if I set up parameters for success and I set up parameters for failure, I know where those lines are. So to set up the parameters for success, it could look something like I'm going to have a teacher training and I'm going to have it over the next 5 years and I want an average of 15 people every year that I run my training. Right? That's a realistic goal. And the parameters for success, right? So the idea of, or if you're in a relationship situation and you're thinking about like, oh, I want to be in a relationship, right? What does that look like? What does a successful, realistic look at relationships look like for you? And that could be different for everybody. For one person, it might be, oh, that we are living together, that we are committed, that we are moving towards a common goal of family and time together and that kind of thing. Somebody else's version of success in a relationship might be, very different than that. So it's good to set up your own parameters so you don't stay all vague and foggy and you go, well, I'm not going to talk about that with anybody because I don't want to seem weird or something like that. But then you get into a relationship and slowly, and then you get married and you've never had those conversations. Well, then it's like, what does that actually lend itself to, then you're invested in this thing where people aren't actually on the same page. So to specify your goal, as he says, to claim it and naming it are two very important points of connecting to your Dharma. Now, Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita is he was born into the Kshatriya caste. Kshatriya means warrior caste. So he's born into this caste, so he knew he was going to be a warrior. That's an important point. One of the things that he talks about in the book is Henry David Thoreau and how he used to have this quote of, get on your bone, get on your bone. And then he would say, find your bone, bury it, dig it up, chew it, bury it again, right? So it's like, get on your bone. It's like, get on to your Dharma and then bury it, like put a little, like get really into it, and then dig it up again, like go back to it, go back to the basics of whatever it is you want to pursue, and then gnaw on it again, right? Get on your bone. I thought that was such a great analogy just because I could just picture it in my head. But don't think that once you get on that path that now it's smooth sailing and there's never going to be a bump in the road. So you have to kind of put that in perspective. And then there's a word, vairagya, which means dispassion, which means to come to this thing with dispassion, with not passion, but to come to it with discipline. Right? That's a huge thing within yoga. Abhyasa and vairagya, prolonged practice, uninterrupted practice, along with dispassion, the mood at which you're practicing it. And if you find any elite musician, you'll find vairagya, because it's about like not just practicing on the days you want to practice, but practicing on the days that you don't want to practice. So with your Dharma, don't expect it to just be this thing. You need to nurture it. You need to understand, and then to work through the parameters of what's going to help you succeed. In the book, he talks about Robert Frost, how he bought a farm because that was going to help him at first to be around nature. And then he actually ended up moving to Europe and kind of living over there in that lifestyle. And that's where he really found his voice. So setting up those parameters, like maybe you need a certain amount of time by yourself to nurture your own soul and to nurture, or your bhuti actually, your soul is perfect the way it is according to yoga, but to nurture the parts of you that are going to be creative, and you need that time away from people to generate that kind of shakti or power. That would be like setting up the parameters for your Dharma. If it's martial arts, it might be setting up the schedule so you can get to class and get better at your craft, right? So whatever it is, you set up some kind of parameters. Maybe it's like, for me, it's like with yoga, like I find that I want to be in a more yogic environment, or when I practice, to be in a yogic environment with pictures of some of the deities, and to have a clean space to do the practice. It's so much more powerful to me with that. So that's like setting up the parameters for what's going to help you connect to your Dharma. I've talked about this with people in training, where they go, well, how am I supposed to know what my Dharma is? And there's so many ways to answer that question. But the best way I found is to have people do the death meditation, which is basically, you know, you can imagine and really accept that you're going to die. And when you put time parameters on it, it makes things come alive a little bit. If I say you're going to die in a year, right, you probably would quit your job Well, if we shortened it even, if I said you were going to die in 3 months, you may quit your job if it's not really something you like, right? As opposed to if I said you're dying in 10 years. Now, when you're dying in 10 years, it's not necessarily going to impact you the same way where you have to quit your job. You might go, okay, 10 years, I could still, and you might set up some parameters where you're then going to leave your job in the next year to get a new job. So I like to do it in different time frames. Usually I like a 10-year one, I like a 5-year, and I like a 1-year. Sometimes I'll do 20 as well. Depends on your age, right? I'm 46. So a 20-year one is great because what do you want it to look like as you get older? So for me, when I see my dharmic vision, right? Like I can see what happens, and then all of my decisions are hopefully being made to support that dharmic connection to get to that strategic goal. And then I make tactical decisions along the way to get to that strategic goal. So, but we need to locate our dharma. So if you do the death meditation and you do it in the different time frames, you will find that there will be a common thread through those years of things you want to accomplish, things you want to do. You want to spend time with family. You want to, you know, you wish you explored this hobby or that hobby. Well, why wouldn't we do that every day? And once you do that a few times, you'll see that thread and you'll see what is it? What is it that I'm supposed to be doing? That's, to me, the best way I've found to connect to my dharma, which is so important. Any questions or comments, please feel free to reach out. Om Namo is a yogic center for learning and a holistic treatment center that has many modalities. I treat here with acupuncture and herbs. I have some friends who are treating with massage. So feel free to find us at www.omnamoji.com. And that you can check out what we offer here. And I hope you enjoyed today's podcast, and keep an eye out for more.